For me, it really helped to always follow my passion as my first goal rather than thinking, oh, I will get rich or have an amazing career. Because I think that makes you maybe a little bit more resilient and makes you go that extra mile. Because I'm really motivated at what I do. What I do is my hobby. I don't need hobbies. This is my hobby, right? So I think that definitely helps. And then I think it's also good to do what you're good at. So for me, like, you know, I like looking at data, I like numbers and all of that. So like, do what you like and what you're good at. I think it's much easier than trying to force something.
You're listening to Hawk Talk, a podcast all about the origin stories of the most interesting people in the world. Today, you know our guests as famous athletes, authors, and entrepreneurs. But there's so much more to the story. Let's get into today's interview with your host, Eric Huberman.
All right, you're listening to Hawk Talk. I'm here today with Alina Berglund. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for coming on. So to kick it off, I assume, you know, you're born, you're in the delivery room and you decide that's it. No one else should be going through this. Like, we're going to stop all this birth stuff. Like, that's how it started, right? You were immediately into contraception. We got to slow this down.
Yeah. No one should be able to go through this horrible experience of being born, right?
But let's start from the beginning. Like, where are you from originally?
I'm from Sweden and south of Sweden, like Sweden's third biggest city.
And what's that called?
Malmö.
Oh, yeah. I have some friends from there. Very cool. And so taking it way back, during childhood, what did your parents do? What was sort of your childhood like? Would love to hear more of like kind of how we led to this interest and passion.
Well, maybe I should start with saying that originally I'm a physicist. I'm a particle physicist. And I've been wanting to become a physicist since I was about 5 years old. So like, as a little girl, I was really obsessed with like the universe and black holes and understanding like the Big Bang and everything. And I always loved math and physics from my start at school. And I used to talk a lot with both my grandfather and my dad about like, you know, understanding the night sky. And yeah, so I never really dreamt about me doing anything in contraception, really. It was more like physics, and then eventually physics led me into where I am today.
Nice. And that just came from having a fascination, as you said, with space, the night sky, growing up that way. Were your parents scientists, or were they into that side of things?
Well, my dad is actually a professor in medicine. My grandfather was an engineer. It's funny because when I was rather young, I also thought, yeah, I want to be a medical doctor like my dad, because, you know, then I can do all the math and physics.
Yeah.
It's only later I realized that actually just because he was interested in the night sky too, it's not necessarily because he's a medical doctor.
And so that started at five. Did you like during school, so math and physics, like while you were in school, was that like you were always fully into that? Were you like doing extracurriculars around that? Like, was it literally your entire childhood? It was really leading up to being that?
Yeah, that was always my favorite subjects. And I think it was one exception was maybe the second year of high school when I went through this troubled teenager phase. And I thought, maybe I want to be a psychologist and kind of cure my own problems. But except that one year, like, yeah, I always wanted to study physics. And I did end up studying physics engineering. And then I did a PhD at CERN in particle physics, and then a postdoc where I was part of discovering the Higgs particle, which led to the Nobel Prize.
Yep.
And it was only after that I thought of maybe I should do something other than physics now, because I can never top this in my life. So I have to come up with something new. And for me, that was a bit scary because as long as I can remember, only wanted to be a physicist, nothing else.
And so I'm curious, like, I mean, I get it. You get the Nobel Prize. It's hard to go above and beyond that, participate in that. But if this was your dream, like, was that really what drove you? Was achievement? Like, okay, I've achieved the top level of this. It's time to find the new place where I can achieve. Like, what do you think? Where do you think that comes from?
I always follow my passion. Like, I never really cared about like career. So I was very passion driven from the start, which led me into particle physics. And when we discovered the Higgs particle, it was such an amazing experience. And I remember like for exactly 3 weeks after that, I was kind of like floating on cloud nine. But after 3 weeks, the feeling started being replaced with like some kind of feeling of emptiness. Like,
now what?
I needed something new. I needed a new challenge. And also the accelerator at CERN was shutting down for about 2 years for an upgrade before we would get new data. And clearly data and statistics and algorithms is what I'm a data junkie.
Yep.
So no data for 2 years is also a bit of a bummer. So yeah. I thought, well, you know, I'm still pretty young. So if I would ever consider doing something else,
yep,
now is the time.
And what led, let's talk about the past. So you obviously went to school for this, got your PhD in particle physics. And then how did you fall into that team, that study that found the Higgs particle? Like, how did that all come to fruition?
So when I did my PhD at CERN, that was also when they just actually turned on this big new accelerator and collected new data. So that was a really cool experience that, you know, actually my experiment called the ATLAS experiment, one of the detectors at the Large Hadron Collider, it was designed in 1984 initially, and that's the year I was born. So there were all these people that had worked on it for like, I don't know, 25 years. And then I came in exactly when they turned it on and I got the first data. And in the beginning, we didn't start by looking at the Higgs particle. We started by looking at more like other particles we know well to understand the detector, etc. But then when I finished my PhD and I was going to choose a topic for my postdoc, I thought like, okay, I had such luck in my timing so far. I feel like now we're getting to the volumes of data where we can actually discover or rule out the Higgs particle.
Yeah.
So for my postdoc, I want to work on this. And again, I was right because like 1.5 years later, this is when we did that discovery.
As you said, the feeling was excitement for 3 weeks, basically. And then, oh, now what? Actually, and to take a step back, for layman's terms, what is the Higgs particle? Why is that impactful? Why did that change things? Why did that win a Nobel Prize?
We have something called the Standard Model of Particle Physics, which describes all the basic building blocks of our universe. And it was initially created, the theory behind it in like the 60s. So it's an old theory. And one by one, every 10 years or so, another particle has been discovered. And the Higgs particle is the particle that interacts with some of the other particles and gives it mass. So that was a big missing piece of the puzzle to understand like what does mass come from? What's the origin of mass? And why do like the photon, light does not have any mass, but the electron has mass. So the photon does not interact with the Higgs particle. And either the theory could still be wrong if we could prove that the Higgs particle did not exist, or we would discover the Higgs particle and then we knew that, okay, the standard model, it works very well. I mean, it still has doesn't explain dark matter and a few of these things, but it's pretty great. So it was a big deal. And I think many people at CERN actually was hoping to rule out the Higgs particle, to exclude it rather than find it. But it was also exciting to find it.
Well, yeah, and you want that competition too. Like that's where you get the most truth is like, you don't want everybody to be on one side of bias that like you're all hoping for the same outcome. You want to actually be open to the objective outcome of what happens. So that's awesome. And so again, you've had a lifetime of, you know, like being from 5 years old to then having this culmination and, you know, having this amazing discovery. And after a few weeks, the kind of excitement wears off, which I think happens with just about every vocation and every calling. It's like people assume that once you reach that pinnacle, like you just have perpetual happiness. Like once you win an Academy Award, that's it. You're happy for the rest of your life. You achieved it. And really what happens is you have a ton of excitement in the moment and then you go, well, now what? And so, you know, and some people keep at it. They chase that high. They try to achieve the next milestone, whatever that might be, or create a new one. And for you, you really looked at pivoting. So how quickly after that did you start going, I need to get out of this completely?
Quite quickly, actually. So many people ask me, how do you get from particle physics to birth control? Well, it actually started a few months before the Higgs discovery that I was looking for a natural birth control method myself that was effective and easy to use. And I realized that the body temperature changes throughout the cycle, something well researched, but women used to do it by hand, so it wasn't very effective. So I started creating this algorithm for myself. For me, I felt it was very empowering to start understanding my body, looking at this data. I'm a data junkie, so I found it very exciting. And then when after the Higgs discovery, it was actually also a few weeks after that was also when me and my now co-founder got married and went on our honeymoon. And we were discussing during our honeymoon, okay. And I was thinking like, okay, if I would leave physics, what would I do? I never had any other dream. But my husband, he has always wanted to, he's also a physicist, but he got into physics because he wanted to discover something that he could make into a company. He always wanted to become an entrepreneur. So he thought, well, this algorithm you've started creating, you know, many women and couples out there would benefit from this, from either natural birth control or also planning pregnancy.
Yep.
And he always had a lot of ideas throughout our years we've been together. And I never really listened to many of them with like any seriousness. But this one, I thought, actually, this is a great idea. You know, we can make this into an app. This was 2012, so you wanted to make anything into an app. And so it was during our honeymoon that we thought, okay, let's do this. It would still take me another 6 months to get out of physics and finish up the projects and stuff. But that's kind of how it happened.
And so how was that? You jump in, you have this algorithm. Did you raise money to build an app? Did you, like, how was the process of like making that switch from, again, also being a scientist, your career and your calling, to getting into starting a business, which is a very different challenge in that sense too?
Yeah. So 6 months later, we both quit our jobs in physics. So my husband and co-founder, he started working at IBM Consulting to learn about how to run a business. Meanwhile, I like kind of locked myself into our apartment for 1 year to finish the algorithm, code the first version of the app. So I did all that myself.
You did? Wow.
Yeah. And 1 year after that, we released.
Where'd you learn coding, like that type of writing code?
Mostly at CERN, actually. I mean, at CERN, we deal with huge amounts of data.
Yeah.
Like truly big data. People that say big data, it's not big data. CERN is big data.
Yeah.
So you need to do that programmatically. What was hard for me though was more like making an app that actually looks nice, because you know, design was very far away from my core skill set. And like, so the first version of the app, it had all the functionality, but it looked like crap.
Did you try to get good at it? Like, did you read books or try to figure out how to do design? Like, was there anything you did there? Or was it like, nope, I'm just getting done what I can and moving forward?
Yeah, more the latter, I would say. And indeed, like when we started talking to investors, they said like, maybe you should, you know, get help from a UX designer. I'm like, but is that important? Like the app works. Isn't that good enough? But I now know that design is insanely important.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that.
Got it.
Then.
And so you built it in a year yourself, had a functional app. And then did you immediately go out to raise money? What was kind of the next step of building it?
Around the same time we got the first version of the app out, we also raised an angel round in Switzerland. And with that money, we moved from Switzerland to Sweden to make Sweden our first proof of concept market.
Got it. And how was that, like, emotionally, the kind of mental experience of that, of like, again, going from like the pinnacle of a career to like starting over, being on the ground, doing it yourself, as you said, locking yourself in your apartment? Were you built for it, or was it challenging at times in that sense?
I really like executing. It makes me happy. I feel like I'm doing something. What was tough though was more the loneliness aspect of it. Because like at CERN, at the Atlas experiment, we were 3,000 physicists working together. And my Higgs team, we were around 100 people. And it was quite lonely. So at some point, like, I moved to like more of a co-working space because I need to have someone to say good morning to and have lunch with after like 9 months of working at home. So that was the tough part. But I love the part where I had no meetings. I could just really go all in and focus on what I was doing and what I was building. I mean, that was the only opportunity for me to ever do that. I could not do that now.
Yeah.
But that part I really enjoyed.
Got it. And so you raised an angel round, moved to Sweden. Did it take off right away? Did people get it? And it was just like, you know, immediate adoption?
Not immediate. It took like 6 months until first we actually redesigned the app. So we had a pretty version that people enjoyed. And then 6 months later, we did a partnership with Sweden's biggest influencer at the time. who kind of announced our app. And then, you know, from one day to another,
really,
we had the Swedish market. Yeah, it was a...
And what year was that?
That was 2014.
Okay, got it. And so one, and I, it's funny, like back then influencers were, now they're still good, but then it was like, it could be a game changer with a good influencer partnership. And did you guys build a business model around it right away? Or was it originally just like, let's give it away for free, let's have people do it, or how did it work?
So that we also, I think, did differently. We thought like, okay, this is an app for contraception. So contraception, you know, to be trustworthy, it's worth something. It should not be for free. We got a lot of pushback from investors like, no, give it out for free and scale it and figure out monetizing later. But that's one of the things I'm actually very happy that we did differently. Because from the start, we had to like figure out the hard part of like, okay, what are people willing to pay for? How can we do this?
Yeah. And so it's been 10 years since you launched this. What were, in terms of the ramp, in terms of growth, like what were sort of the challenges along the way? Did you guys ever hit some headwinds or some things that you're like, oh, wow, this is like that were like sort of critical parts in growing this business and building it out?
Yeah, I would say that we had two major challenges. The first one was the regulatory part, like because this was before there was any app as a medical device. So the regulatory part, no one had figured it out yet. And here we were in Sweden, like growing like crazy. And of course, the Swedish Medical Product Agency woke up and said, okay, this app is for birth control, but you're not cleared as a medical device for birth control, which we actually had contacted them asking if we need to be. So it was like a bit of a catch-22 moment. And it took a few more years until 2017 until we actually managed to get that clearance in Europe. And then in 2018, we also got an FDA clearance as the first and still the only digital birth control medical device product.
Did you have to stop or not come to the US or do certain things because of that? Or were you able to operate while you were getting those approvals?
We could operate and call ourselves a fertility monitor, but we couldn't market it as a contraceptive product, which we initially had done in Sweden. So that was kind of why we had that first crisis.
Got it. And so after 2018, you got all those approvals. Does really being able to lean into contraception, like, has that done a lot for the business? Or was it a fertility versus that? Did it both work?
I mean, we also have users using it to plan a pregnancy, and it works really well. But 80% of our users use it initially as a birth control method. And I think that's our biggest USP, because then you need to really get it right. Well, if you're trying to get pregnant, you can always have more sex.
And only can share what you feel comfortable sharing, but like how many users are on it, or daily active users, monthly active users are you at this point?
So I think we usually share like registered users, which we now have more than 3 million of. I can also share that we're now a profitable company 10 years down the line. And we just got our third FDA clearance to integrate with Apple Watch. So now you can use your temperature sensor in the Apple Watch with the app. And so the Apple Watch Plus Natural Cycles now is actually a birth control method. And we launched that last week. So still getting these highs and getting bored a few weeks later. But yeah,
that's how it has to go. That's how you push forward. And what was the original motivation for this? Obviously, you wanted to take a step out of physics, but was it also like you were looking for a natural birth control? Is it because of the negative effects of what's out there? Or like what really drove the original need to build your own algorithm?
Yeah, so as a teenager, I had struggled with the pill. I think it's very common. It can make you very moody and it can change your personality. And of course, we know the hormones affects the brain, so it affects you. After that, I had the hormonal implants that you put in your arm for almost 10 years, and that worked quite well for me. But this was time to take it out, and I knew we wanted to have kids in a few years, so I didn't want to put another one in. And I was like, can't I do this naturally for a few years in the meantime? And I think many women feel the same, like after a decade on the pill or something, like, okay, time to actually get to know my body instead of.
Yeah. And it seems like, I mean, there are significant downsides to the pill. Like it's like the you know, increased risk of clots, the risk of not actually being fertile after getting off the pill. Like there's, you know, consequences a lot of the time with that. But, and then just as you said, the hormone changes, the moods changes, the your body changes, all those kind of things that happen because of it. So a couple more questions for you. Again, as someone that's always looking to the next thing, you just got this big Apple Watch partnership, another FDA approval. What's next? What are you excited for coming down the line?
Well, since we only launched it last week, I'm still a little bit in this phase of, okay.
Yeah, I don't want to take that away. Maybe we just...
But it's very exciting. But I feel like, now we have all these potential Apple Watch users that we have to explain our product to. And it's not so easy to explain and figure out how do we appeal to this new audience that we have. So it's a lot of optimization and that's fun too, I think. I'm a big mixed panel junkie.
Perfect. And then last question for you, because you're someone that, and honestly, I don't think I've had someone on my podcast in well over 100 episodes. We've had amazing high achievers, but not people that have achieved at a very high level. And then when I'm going to start over and do something completely different and start and do this again, what would be your advice for someone that wants to chase a dream or figure out that, sort of mountain to climb, that thing to pursue? So advice you either wish you got or did get that helped you push along the way?
For me, it really helped to always follow my passion as my first goal rather than thinking, I will get rich or have an amazing career. Because I think that makes you maybe a little bit more resilient and makes you go that extra mile. Because I'm really motivated at what I do. What I do is my hobby. I don't need hobbies. This is my hobby, right? So I think that definitely helps. And I think it's also good to do what you're good at. So for me, I like looking at data, I like numbers and all of that. So do what you like and what you're good at. I think it's much easier than trying to force something.
Amen. Couldn't agree more. Well, Lena, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for coming on Hawk Talk.
Well, thank you for having me.
Of course.
You've been listening to Hawk Talk. To ensure you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, we'd love for you to give us a quick rating for the show. Just tap the number of stars you think this podcast deserves. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.